When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is up, everybody? Thank you all for joining me on the latest Morecast, part of the CSG Network. I'm, of course, your host, Jeff Morton. With me today is my friend and frequent guest on this podcast, the great and wonderful Tim Miller. Hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. It's playoff time, Mort. It's playoff time, baby. You it ready? Is. King of Thornton. It's it time. Is.
We've been, you know, now that you have increased responsibilities in the podcast world, yeah. I was hesitant to say Tim needs to come on because I don't want you to spoil your voice on my lowly old podcast and I did, considering how many you do. So, but I appreciate the time that you've given me today for this.
I appreciate you asking me, and I love talking Nuggets, and I do. I've taken over the Daily Bulwark podcast, which is nice. Comes out every afternoon. Mm-hmm. You can get your political fix on there. I don't think that the listeners really want in detailed analysis of the Nuggets rotation, playoff rotation. And so I have some thoughts on that. I'd like to get it out with you.
Well, this is what we're going to do. I we forgot to mention the news that broke just before we're about to record is that the NBA has banned Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, Jonte, who was playing for the Toronto Raptors and has not played for about a month now. They have banned him for life from the NBA for gambling violations, including betting on his own team, to lose.
betting on himself, I think.
Betting
right?
on himself, yeah. Gaining about $21,000 worth of bets at one time. It was just a giant shit show. So, I mean, what is your initial thoughts about this as news came down on it?
Yeah. Man, it sucks for Mike. That's my first thought. It's been a tough year, maybe a year and a half. His brother had the vehicular homicide situation and his other brother banned from the league. It's got a weigh on the family. I know it's a close family. You know, his dad, was his dad in the bubble somehow? Did his dad get inside the bubble? You know, there are not that many people allowed. And so the family's close. Boy, I think it's got to be tough for him to deal with that, though. His play has been, I think, really good this year, in spite of what's happening with his other brother. So he's demonstrated an ability to compartmentalize. I feel bad for him. On the gambling side, these guys had no choice. Gambling has proliferated very quickly. you know, right. And the way that the league is entangled with gambling sponsors has, gone up significantly,
right,
in a very short period of time. And I'm pro that. I'm pro game. I gamble mm-hmm. sometimes. I got my little DraftKings app. I live in the free state of Louisiana now after having moved from California. So I am available to, able to, you know, wager some very small dollar amounts just for kicks on games. I have some hesitancy about it. I don't think it's particularly healthy for people with gambling problems to have casinos on their phone. But I do think in a free country, people should be able to gamble on sports. But to maintain the integrity of the league, you know, you have to almost over punish any infractions in order to scare other people. And, you know, the Jonte Porter thing, it's like, man, his brother has a max deal. Mm-hmm. Like you're trying to, you know, get less than 1.5 rebounds in a game, fewer than 1.5 rebounds in a game. Excuse me. I've got to be too correct usage now that I'm a podcast host, right? I can't get that wrong. For 20 grand, I mean, God, that's such small ball stuff. And I think he's got to get punished for that, because you got to figure there are other guys in his shoes who don't have brothers making max deals for whom that money might mean more.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe the league needs to think a little bit about the rules on some of the, you know, all of the different permutations of how you can gamble on games. I don't, you know, should you be letting, you know, able to gamble on people's rebounds? I don't know. I think maybe there's some things that are probably worth reviewing on that front, because that definitely seems much easier to rig than
right
some of the other stuff.
Well, it's the prop bets that are the ones that are the ones that really infect specific play. You know, it's, I had a conversation with another guest about this a while back, and we were talking, this is after the news came down that they were investigating him, Jonte. And I said, well, the prop bets are the problem, because the prop bets are make it extremely easy to alter your own play if you are susceptible to that sort of thing. And it was obvious that the NBA was going to go thermonuclear on Jonte Porter, because they need to make a example out of someone, and they're very fortunate it wasn't a star.
Right.
It's very easy for the NBA now to get the bazooka out and say, this is, you're done. And but I do think the NBA needs to have a reckoning with its association with gambling. I'm surprised it didn't happen before, to be quite honest with you. This is stunning to me that it took this long for the league to finally have something like this happen, and it was someone like Jonte, you know.
Yeah, I will say, astoundingly stupid by Jonte. You hate to just like dump on somebody while they're down, but like, you don't think the league is going to notice when there is a huge spike in the amount of bet and the amount of money being placed on a Jonte Porter under. You know, it's not like you can hide under, you know, it's like you can squeeze that in. And I do think the league has that going against them. Like, the big players that get gambled on, that maybe you could sneak under the radar because there's so much traffic, well, they don't need the money.
Right.
And I don't, who knows what's happening with Shohei and all that. So maybe, you know, sometimes you just have people with gambling addictions, but, I don't know. Hopefully it's a wake up call to some of the people in the league. And I do think that they should revisit some of, you know, and think about ways to put a little bit more friction on all of the various ways that you can gamble on games. I'm for gambling, but I think a little bit of added friction is okay.
Well, and it's important to emphasize what he was doing was legal. It was unlike the Pete Rose thing when he was going through a bookie.
Right.
And that is why there's no further other things happening with Jonte, is this is a strictly a league matter. So unlike Pete Rose going through an illegal bookie and all sorts of other things that happened with that sort of thing, this is completely different.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting how the league handles this. Obviously the league wants to make an example, and they did, and maybe this will have an effect on players, but you know, you also have executives who are prone to this sort of thing. You also have, you know, there's other layers of the NBA, and hopefully there's this lesson that'll happen in this that will permeate through the league. I think that's the NBA's ultimate goal in this. It seems like that's what they wanted to do. And honestly, if it does it, then more power to him. And obviously Jonte, as you pointed out, his brother has a max contract in the NBA, so the family will be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess he can probably, end up playing where he's going to be playing anyway.
That's right. That's right.
Greece, China.
Greece.
With Will Barton in Russia. Why is Will Barton in Russia again? Will Barton, leave Russia, please.
Don't go to Russia. Yes. He's with his former teammate, Mozgov. So let's talk about what happened last night as the Los Angeles Lakers looked like they were cruising to a victory, and then Zion Williamson happened and nearly brought the Pelicans all the way back. Unfortunately, a hamstring injury befell Zion before he was able to do that. And I be honest with you, Tim, if that didn't happen, I think the Pelicans probably would have won that game the way the things were heading, and we would have a different outlook. But nevertheless, the Denver Nuggets are going to be pacing the Los Angeles Lakers. What are your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was torn, obviously. Living in New Orleans, getting to see the Nuggets in the first round here would have been nice. But at the same time, having the hate fire of playing the Lakers, just the pure, uncut hate fire, there's something appealing about that to me, too. Because it has been, I look, every moment I get to watch Nikola Jokic is a joy, and I savor it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just the level of intensity this year has just been down for me as a viewer. I think it's maybe natural. I mean, look, you talk about the players having a hangover, and people are like, why aren't they giving full effort? I'm not giving full effort on my couch over here, you know, right. Some games, right? Because it's just like they won the title, and there is a little bit of, you know, you can exhale. Yeah, after long suffering, after the team never making it to the finals. So I do feel like the Lakers are going to focus the mind a little bit from a fan's perspective, which I'm excited about, because you do not want to lose to them.
No.
And have to deal with the fraudulent title nonsense narrative that would come.
Right.
I'm not really worried that we're going to lose to them, knock on wood. I don't know. I maybe feel like I might be playing the Jeff Morton role this year. Last year, you were very confident.
I was
pretty confident. I mean, once we dispatched the Suns, I was already starting to plan my, you know, kind of finals travel to Denver. But through the first, through the Suns round, at least, I was, you know, I had a little bit of Nug life. Nug life hangover and just what's going to go wrong, worrying, catastrophizing was hanging over me. I don't feel that way this year. I feel very good about this team. I feel very good about the way they match up to the Lakers. They've won against the Lakers 9 straight times now. I thought that the Lakers' offense looked like abominable last night in the fourth quarter. They almost gave that game away. They couldn't get good shots. Now, the Pels have Herb Jones is an elite defender. KCP and AG are really good. I don't know that they're quite on Herb Jones' level. So the Pels do have a few things that they can do defensively, slightly better than Nuggets maybe. But man, the Lakers were not even getting good shots. I mean, they were taking these horrible LeBron fadeaways and, you know, Austin Reeves heaves and playing hero ball. And I just, when you compare that to the way the Nuggets offense runs at the end of games, and they've had a few hiccups this year coming down the stretch, most notably that Spurs game. Is it going to be a sweep again? I don't know, right? But if you just compare this, the efficiency and the shot making and the types of looks that the Nuggets are going to get down the stretch of close games compared to the Lakers, there could be injuries, other things can happen, there's luck, but I feel very, very confident about this matchup. We can talk about it more in detail if you want.
Well, here's what my initial thought is. That fourth quarter should be an alarm, or so third into the fourth quarter should be a very big alarm bell for the Lakers, because both, and this is something that I heard someone else talk about today, I think it was the Hoop Collective, but both Davis and LeBron looked old. And that was something that really stood out to me. Their shots were tired shots. They weren't shots of execution. They weren't shots of being open. They were like, when you get tired, you take fadeaways. And there was a lot of LeBron fadeaways. And Anthony Davis couldn't hit I think he was 6 of 16, something like that, in the game.
Yeah. And just one example of that, and one of their key buckets, it was maybe one of their last two or three buckets, last 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. LeBron takes a terrible shot from the wing. And AD gets an offensive rebound and misses the first putback badly and then gets another offensive rebound and scores. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the, and that was a key bucket, I think, to put him up four. Like, that's not happening against the Nuggets. I mean, yeah. The only reason that happened is because Zion was out and pulled his hammy, or else, you know, that, but, and then for some reason, Willie Green, I got my Pelicans fans now, some of my Pelicans friends now that I moved to New Orleans, so they're all texting me, what the fuck? Like, Willie Green has this rotation at the end where Larry Nance is playing the five, Zion is out, B.I. gets benched, I guess. I haven't really thought, did he also tweak something, or did he just get benched? I haven't looked this morning.
He was just benched.
He got straight benched. That's what
I
thought.
He was so bad.
Maybe the news would come out that something had tweaked, or maybe they would lie and pretend like something got tweaked to save his ego or something, but they bench B.I., Zion is gone. For some reason, Valanciunas is on the bench, which I don't get. I love Valanciunas in that matchup against them. He's not Jokic. Right. He's not prime Arvydas Sabonis or anything out there, but at least it's a big body. But AD just gets free reign to get two offensive rebounds off a horrific shot because the Pels have no size in the game because of Zion's injury and a weird choice by Willie Green. So, I mean, that was a total bailout. Like, that ain't happening with Jokic and Aaron Gordon. And then the size and the length that the Nuggets have, and MPJ even, he's not a lockdown defender, but he has size and length. I don't know. I mean, there was not anything that the Lakers were doing down the stretch to make me think, wow, I'm really nervous about what is going to happen in a close matchup, or they've really figured something out. D-Lo is playing better than he was playing last year. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just trying to think, like, I'm trying to give the counter thoughts, right? Like, AD and LeBron a little older. D'Lo is playing a little better. Austin, they've kind of incorporated a little bit more. But I don't know what Gabe Vincent, like, one of my Lakers friends was texting me about Gabe Vincent. I'm like, man, Gabe Vincent ain't it. All right. Ugly Drake. Like, Drake's ugly little brother ain't fucking it. All right. Like, that's not going to be the key cog that defeats the Nuggets. So I don't know, man. I'm pretty confident.
Me too. And it's one of those things where you've seen the nature of the matchup play out during this last regular season.
Yes.
The Lakers can stay close, but the big kind of indication you see about the way the Nuggets are is because they always inevitably pull away at the end.
Right.
And it was kind of like what the Lakers did to the Nuggets back in the 2000s. It was like the Nuggets could stay close, but the Lakers would always pull away. And this is like the exact opposite. And one of these things that I saw too, they're bailed out by Willie Green putting CJ McCollum back in. And CJ McCollum was terrible yesterday, particularly in the second half. And when they took Jose Alvarado out, they gave him a break. They gave the Lakers a break because he was harassing the crap out of whoever had the ball. And then CJ McCollum gets in and he can't hit a shot. He's not taking good shots. They don't have Valanciunas in there. Big Buddy Ben's there. So, I mean, it's like, it's what do you, I mean, it, there was some bad, there were some poor choices made.
Yeah. I mean, the Pels got to change their, who knows what happened with them and the Kings, and either of them could maybe give the Thunder a little bit of a run because the Thunder size issues, the Thunder, like the Nuggets, are going to get good shots down the stretch, unlike these teams that aren't as good because of Shea. It's so weird. It's like the Pelicans were better with the big names like on the bench, like with B.I. and CJ on the bench. Like that's just it. Like with Alvarado, more Alvarado, Herb, Trey Murphy, Hawkins even, right? Like and obviously Zion, that's when they looked better. But they did bail out the Lakers. I just, and just think about that five that we're talking about. Yeah. It's in down the stretch. I mean, the Pelicans barely, blow it against the Lakers with like nobody. I mean, with a very young team, like a 2016 right. Nuggets type team, like that's playing down the stretch. And, that the Nuggets are going to have the championship starting lineup back. I'm just seeing a lot of alley-oops to Aaron Gordon to close games. That's just kind of what I'm manifesting and just envisioning.
Well, I mean, since we saw the Lakers last year, we saw them all through this year, they've won 9 in a row. There's not much tweaking that can be done. I mean, these are
the Rui adjustment.
Yeah, the Rui adjustment. I mean, now I've been hearing from Lakers fans, they're going to get a heavy dose of Cam Reddish in this one. It's like, as if that is going to be the secret sauce this time. So, I mean, obviously, the, you know, delusional Lakers fans, but I think that there's not a lot we could talk about matchup wise because we know it. This is it. Yeah. It's like, when I was talking to a couple of people, I said, how am I going to break this down? And my thought was, it's going to be me repeating myself from all the regular season matchups this year as this team is constituted. It's just, it's the same thing. And in order for the Lakers to win, they need Davis and LeBron to be super people, kind of like the Suns did in the second round last year. They would need superhuman efforts for them to win, or D'Lo having one of those odd one-off great shooting games, right?
Right.
And they don't have Bruce Brown to harass him, but they still have Christian Brown out there. So,
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
But,
yeah.
You think back to the last time the Lakers really beat us, it's a totally different team, but it's the bubble, you know, and in that, I mean, we're playing Mason Plumlee there at a key moment, which tells you just kind of the difference between then and now. But even still, Dwight Howard coming off the bench and giving Jokic some trouble with size was a key part of that series. Right. And I was kind of surprised that the Lakers didn't do anything to even try. I don't think it really would work, like, for the Lakers to come and get some, you know, big body defensive disruptor to come in and play 12 minutes. I don't think that's probably would have made the difference between winning and losing the series, but at least it would have been something. Like, they don't have anything to slow down Jokic. Like, just the laughability of the fact that we're going to put Rui Hachimura on Jokic and have Anthony Davis roam. Yeah. And that's the solution. I mean, that just got exposed so easily last year. It's going to get exposed so easily again. You know, we could talk about maybe what might happen in the next round with the Timberwolves and how that's a little bit different. How Tim Connelly's put together a team that at least in theory could create trouble for the Nuggets because he knows the Nuggets. But the Lakers didn't even really seem to try to do that. So it's very much the same team. And yeah, it seems like a loss would be not because of matchups analysis or because something different is happening, but like luck, right? An injury, the refs, bad luck, one hot game, you know. And even then it's kind of like, all right, four times, you know, you got to figure out that's got to be a path to four wins. It's not a one game. See, it's not a March Madness situation. So yeah. I feel very good. And I'll be interested, you know, to see what, you know, the only matchup thing that I think is even interesting to think about is like how much time we see from Reggie Jackson and Peyton Watson. And we know who the five are. You know, Christian Brown will get a lot of minutes off the bench when they stagger Jamal. You know, Aaron Gordon will play the five like he did last playoffs in the 8 minutes Jokic doesn't play. Yeah. But the Lakers don't really have anybody to take advantage of that smaller Nuggets lineup. Maybe some other teams we will in the future. So then the question is Peyton playing disruptive kind of role? Is Reggie playing? How much is Reggie playing? How much, you know, how many minutes is Jamal? Are we worried at all about nagging Jamal injuries so Reggie has to play more minutes than maybe would otherwise? I think those are the only things that I'm curious about in the first couple of games.
Well, let's kind of remember last year because they had Bruce Brown, who's not really a point guard, running point. You know, he has a hybrid role, but he wasn't a point guard. So even back then, they weren't having the point guard discussion. I think the Nuggets are better off, in my view, if they limit Reggie Jackson's minutes as much as humanly possible, because the cliff he has fallen off the later in the season has been enormous. But it's the Reggie Jackson thing. He's been like that his whole career. And I think the Nuggets have kind of altered themselves a little by having Christian Brown handle the ball a lot more and bring the ball up the court. I can see Christian Brown being in that Bruce Brown role, you know, having him in bringing up the ball, bringing up the doing the things that Bruce Brown used to do, rather than the need to have a traditional point guard and maybe have Reggie either go off ball or limit his minutes as much as possible.
Yeah, that is, I mean, I guess it's the one thing that is missing from Bruce Brown. Like, because he wasn't a point guard, but he was, I would feel much more comfortable with Bruce bringing up the court than Christian Brown. Yeah. You know, Christian Brown, that's just not his strength. Let's just be honest. You know, playmaking, he's getting better. But he's a head down driving, you know, driving kick kind of open three, right? Like he's not a playmaker. And not that we need a playmaker really, but I, you know, so this is why you're thinking about Reggie minutes. When Jokic is off, Reggie and Aaron Gordon together minutes. To me, it's more interesting is like, can Aaron Gordon do it? Like this, now you're asking really a lot from Aaron Gordon because he's going to be guarding LeBron and AD. He's going to be the backup center. And also occasionally he's the point center. I don't know. It's a big ask, but he's a little bit better at that, I think, than Christian Brown. So this is why I think we probably, at least for the start of the playoffs, is my estimation is that we see Reggie when Jokic is off the court with AG. Now, sometimes in the regular season, Reggie and Jokic were playing together. I don't know about that. I think that's different, right? The Christian Brown, you know, if you're staggering Jamal, you can have Christian Brown, KCP, AG, MPJ, or P-Watt, and Jokic, and I think that's totally fine. And Jokic is really the point guard anyway in that situation. And so, that's kind of what I would expect, is that Reggie would play in the 8 minutes Jokic is spelling. But I don't know. And Michael Malone might play a little bit more.
Well, what he did last playoffs was he would get Jamal off the court earlier, and then Jokic would play with Bruce Brown.
Right.
I anticipate something similar to where Jokic is. Yeah, where Jokic is the security blanket there. I don't necessarily. He's doing the old Patrick Ewing playing the entire first quarter thing, and I wish he would take Jokic out a little earlier just to get them in more in the second quarter, but I think that's just a minor quibble that has nothing to do with anything. I think that Jokic as the bridge and the security blanket kind of lessens the impact of negative Reggie minutes. So if they're going to use Reggie, I suspect that they will have him at that last part of the first quarter into the second quarter, but that last part of the first quarter when Jokic is still on the floor, and they'll be doing that sort of thing. But this is all, I mean, what we're talking about right now is more just directly Nugget stuff that has nothing to do with the Lakers, because
literally nothing. Yeah.
Because it doesn't, it's all about the Nuggets, and that really is it. And, you know, I have
the Lakers can't do anything. They don't have the personnel to make the Nuggets change their rotations. I can't think of a manner in which they do what they could possibly do that would.
No, because their lineup variations feature Austin Reeves and D'Lo basically, and then sprinkling in Davis and LeBron. And those are their big variations, because, you know, as delusional Lakers fans keep saying, Cam Reddish, that's, I don't know. The Nuggets beat the crap
Gabe
out of
Vincent.
Gabe Vincent's another one. And so the Nuggets don't see that sort of thing. It's all about what Jokic can do and all this stuff. But at the same time, you know, I do have one hot take, though. It has nothing to do.
I guess before your hot take, I guess the one thing I will say is, if they're trying to be cute and where they have LeBron and AD out in those 4 minutes where Jokic sits at the beginning of the fourth quarter, maybe that requires a Nuggets slight adjustment to have P-Watt out there, you know, to have a little more length alongside AG. Like, that's the one potential, like, but this is checkers. This is not chess, you know, like, there's a little bit of a small window where we might have to make a size adjustment, but like, that's about it. Anyway, what's your hot take?
My hot take is not necessarily about this particular matchup, but I do think the Nuggets found themselves, and people don't agree with me, but I'm willing to go out on this island. The Nuggets found themselves, I think, in a better position than they were before. Obviously, you want the one seed, but that horrible, awful, no good loss to the Spurs gave them a couple things. One, I talked to a couple of people in the organization, and they're like, well, this gave Malone an opportunity to yell at them.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need that with a bored team. And let's face it, this Nuggets team has been bored for a lot of this season.
They've been bored.
And somehow got 57 wins. So that tells you how good they are. But at the other notion of this is that you were talking about the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves losing in the manner that they have to the Suns, there's no guarantee they are going to beat the Suns. They lost all three matches with them this year. And obviously, by far, the best series on paper is supposed to be the Clippers and the Mavs. with Kawhi out.
Timberwolves Suns for me, yeah for sure. Timberwolves Suns much more interesting.
If Kawhi was playing, I would tip it to that. But anyway, that 3-6 benefited the Nuggets because it got the Suns playing the Timberwolves. That could be an upset. And then on the Thunder, I hate to keep sounding like I'm disrespecting the Thunder, but the Thunder are going to have to prove it. And you're going to get these teams that have been in the playoffs already. Maybe not the Pelicans, the Pelicans are, they've been in the playoffs. They have playoff players, but it's still, but the Kings can run them off the court. And
the Kings had a really intense series last year.
Yes.
Now they've lost some of their depth with some of the injuries, but
they have. And this, there's not going to be, in my view, a single easy matchup. Maybe we're talking about the Nuggets, maybe, but there's not going to be a single. I think the Nuggets actually got themselves accidentally, not on purpose at all, got themselves into actually, I think, maybe a even better position than they were before.
I would disagree. I appreciate the hot take, but I don't know. The Mavericks are the hot buzz team in the NBA podcast land, but I just don't. I'm not really. Like Derek Lively, they still have no depth. It's still all Luka. Could Luka have beaten the Nuggets? We might still get him in the Western Conference Finals. Could Luka beat the Nuggets because he has four games with 50 points? I guess so. Yeah. But I think I'd probably rather take my chances with that than the Suns and the Timberwolves. Just because, and again, I think the Nuggets are going to be favored in all of them. I feel very confident about the Nuggets. We can come back on and discuss Nuggets Celtics if we get there. So I think that's a little bit more interesting. Yeah. I feel confident about all of them, but obviously if I had to rank my series of levels of nervousness, I think I'd put the Mavericks last, in a pretty close race though, between the Timberwolves and Suns and Mavericks. It's a judgment call. I think it's a judgment call, but the Suns just have more options for scoring. We've struggled with them this year. Jamal was out one of those games. Plenty of caveats, but and the T-Wolves just on the size thing. We have a lot of size. The T-Wolves are the one team that can create problems, right? Like you can have the Rui adjustment is actually a real thing when it's Naz Reid on Jokic and Gobert roaming. Because that has shown to give Jokic not a lot of trouble. I mean, Jokic had about 45 on them just the other night. So not a ton of trouble. But, like, you can see that. You can at least see in one game that slowing Jokic down, them frustrating him, playoff refs, they're letting him fucking claw on him a little bit more. Right. You could imagine that. That gives me a little bit of concern. And then when Jokic is out, you assume they take out Gobert, then you have a Naz Reid and Kat type lineup that I think could match up nicely against our bench lineup with Aaron Gordon at the five. So I'm not like panicked about that series. I don't think I would think that the Nuggets should be clear favorites, but that's the one matchup I just look at and think, okay, like they can do some interesting things conceivably. And then the Suns have so many, and then in both the Suns and the Dallas series, you're just making a bet on who are you more scared of putting up 80 in a game, Doncic and Irving or KD and Booker or Booker and Beal, and that's kind of like a slight judgment call one way or the other. I think it's tough for any of those guys to get four against the Nuggets. Really, really tough.
Well, it is what it is. And some of this is now the Nuggets are going to be serious. And this is what I've been waiting for. You know, they've shown it in glimpses this year. They have shown it.
That Minnesota game, for example.
The Minnesota game. The Boston games, that one at home against Milwaukee. They've done it when they
Lakers on trophy night and Kobe night, multiple Kobe Lakers night. Times. Yeah. Yes.
They have their theme nights. I wonder if they're going to have another one this year and during the playoffs. It'll be don't be eliminated, maybe theme. And I think that when the Nuggets have something to prove, they've just gone out and proved it. That the people, everyone should look, if you're looking at the Nuggets, everyone should look at the fourth quarter against the Timberwolves in the last game to see a serious Nuggets team and see what they could do. That is 100% what I would point people to and say, like, because as we pointed out, they've sleptwalked through about 3/4 of the season and you could tell that they were bored out their ass. And I think now they will flip the switch. I was skeptical of the switch flipping And then in their ability to do it last year until they proved it to me, and they did it in the playoffs, like in the first round. And I'm like, now I'm confident that they can switch it on and they'll become a serious team. The team that played against the Spurs was not a serious team. Yeah.
No, no, it wasn't. And there were many times where they weren't serious. And it's, like I said, it's defensible. It's defense is a long season. And, you know, well, the Jamal element of it also. Like, when you talk about the flip switching, like, is there anybody that you're talking about more than Jamal? And Jokic a little bit, but I mean, Jamal, there were times where he was just, and he had some injuries, but then there were some other times during the regular season where he was nowhere. We've barely seen playoff Jamal this year. So I guess if you had to ask me, like, what are my worries for the playoffs? Like, what is the number one, like, I get, and again, this is such a minor worry. I'm so confident in this team. But I guess Jamal would be my top worry, because, like, we really haven't seen consistent Jamal looking like he did in the last playoffs. Does he have some nagging injuries? Can you just flip a switch and get to that level immediately? He's proven it in the past, so I don't, like, doubt him. But I guess if I had a nagging worry, that would be it, because we really do need an A-minus at Jamal to be the type of machine that we were in the 16-4 run last year.
Yeah, and I agree with that completely. And this has been a weird year for Jamal. Two big injury stretches at the beginning of the season, at the end of the season. And we really haven't seen Jamal, you know, yet. Yeah. And you're absolutely right about that. My biggest concern is Brown and Watson. This will be both of their Watson. This will be definitely his first real exposure in the playoffs, other than, you know, watching. And I think this will be an interesting time for him, because he's going to get a lot of fouls called on him. And this is the Lakers, and we know what happens with the Lakers and the refs. And I'm going to be interested to see if that sort of thing cuts off his aggression and all this stuff. I want to see a Peyton Watson that is great on defense and okay on offense. And that is all I want from him. That is literally all I want. But I want him to be that guy off the bench that can lock people down. He is my real only concern in this area.
Yeah. And I think Malone might have a quick trigger with him too.
Yeah. Get Justin Holiday in there or something like that. It's like,
I don't think that's crazy. I don't think it's, I don't think it's crazy to think that Peyton is not fully in the rotation all the way through the playoffs. I hope he is. I'm with you. That doesn't really worry me, because I just don't know how much it matters. I think it'll be I'm also interested to watch that. I love Peyton. I love P-Watt. So I'm hoping that he shines. Yeah. This is his moment.
Get some big blocks on LeBron or something like that. We'll get those highlights out there. All right, before I wrap this up, you watching anything in the play-in games tonight? Anything you're interested in?
I'm kind of intrigued about the Bulls. I love the Bulls a little bit, but I don't want the Celtics to have the out of having to play them. So part of me kind of wanted, like, there's part of me that wants the Bulls to sneak in. I wouldn't mind seeing Jimmy win the Heat win tonight, and having the Celtics have to see Embiid in round one. I know it would not be a fully healthy Embiid, but I think at least maybe that might make it interesting on him. So I think it'd be good for the league to have a Boston Philly series. But no, I don't. The East just seems so fucking
bad.
Yeah, and cooked. Like Boston just seems so much better than everybody. It's very reminiscent of the Cleveland years, you know, where LeBron had these terrible Cleveland teams that were barely challenged, kind of after that version of Boston, after the KG version of Boston kind of aged out. One of those years that Cleveland, like, wasn't even challenged. It feels a little reminiscent of that. So I'd love to see somebody surprise me over there. I just don't know who it would be. Who is your even top contender? I guess, like, Embiid. I guess that's why I come back to Embiid. I guess it's like some miraculous Embiid recovery which is totally out of his history and character. But I would like to at least see somebody make the Celtics sweat a little bit. But I just don't know who that is going to be.
Well, remember that 67 win title winning Celtics team in 2008 did go seven games against the terrible Atlanta Hawks in the first round.
Yeah.
So you'd at least hope for something like that in the East. But, yeah. I tell you what, the Eastern Conference is garbage.
Trash.
Absolute garbage. So
yeah.
Who knows at this point? All right. Well, Tim, thank you for joining me. Anything you want to promote before I...
Thank you. No, I'll see you on text. Yeah, come if you're into politics, come check out the Bulwark Podcast, daily podcast. I've been grinding on it. You know, scroll through, look at the guests, see who might interest you. I've been trying to have a wide range of guests, and it's been really fun to do. And besides that, I'll see you on text. I'll see you on Twitter. I'll be live tweeting the Nugs.
At Tim ODC on
Tim ODC still on X. We're calling it X now.
Oh, we're calling it X.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks so much. Go Nuggets. And go Nugs. We'll see you on the internets.
All right. For Tim, I'm Jeff Morton. And thank you all for joining us on the latest podcast. I'll be back in a couple days with another episode.